And we're holding on page Chof Ches in Rav Metzia, the paragraph Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, the middle of Chof Dalad. Gemara is discussing, the main topic of the Perek is matters of Ribis, and that leads into a discussion of cases where a person pays somebody else's taxes and what rights that gives them over them, because the Gemara, this is one of those examples of dina d'machlokes dina. The Gemara talks about that the law at that time was that everybody had to pay a kraga, it's called in Aramaic, which is a head tax, and that if Reuven pays it on behalf of Shimon, then the law would allow him to make Shimon work for him, like to work off the debt, basically. So that leads the Gemara into the following piece. Rav Se'uram Achur de Rava, Rav Se'uram, that was his name, the brother of Rava, have a takif inshi dele mali. He would grab a hold of people who are not acting in an erlicha way, people who are doing averus, or at least not behaving the way a yid should act, and he would make them carry Rava's guharka. Rashi translates guharka as a wagon. But a wagon is usually pulled by horses, so it means more like either he would hitch up people to that and then make them pull it instead of horses, or we're talking about something more like a litter, which is usually carried by people. The idea is, Shitum Kobetzis brings that, from Abenu Yohanneson, that in particular we can find in some places in the Gemara that where on Yom Tovim, especially when the Rosh Hashiva is going to speak to the public, there would be such large crowds that he couldn't get in to the Beis Medrash the normal way, so they would have to have people carry him in. So now Rav Se'uram is having people carry Rava's chair or litter or wagon or whatever, so that he could get in and out of the Beis Medrash. So Rava says, you're doing right. It's correct to do that. People may think that it's wrong to make a fellow yid work like that, but in fact it's correct. The Tanena, as we learn in a Braisa, the Braisa starts by saying that you're b'derech klal, you're not allowed to force another yid to work for you. So Ra'isa Shein and Noyed Kashura, you can hire a yid to work for you, but you can't force him. In fact, the Gemara mentions in a couple of places in the Masechta that Poyo Yochel Laksubay Afilu B'Chatziya Yoyim, that a worker can quit the job anytime he wants. So you have in the next parak, it talks about there are cases where he's on the hook for the law. That the balabas might have from that if it's a time sensitive thing, but other than that he does have the right to quit. So how do we know that? Ordinarily you're not allowed to force him to work for you. However, if you see that a yid is not acting the way a yid should act, how do we know that you're allowed to make him work for you? Talmud Lomar. So like this, the Pasuk describes, in Parashat Bahar, you have the concept of an Eved Ivri, and then the Pasuk mentions about an Eved Knani. As Rashi explains on the Pasuk, you're going to wonder to yourself, who am I supposed to have to do menial jobs for me? I can't have an Eved Ivri do them, and I can't take from the seven nations of Knan because the Lois Chaya called Neshama. So therefore, the Pasuk explains that, no, you can go purchase Avodim Knanim from the surrounding nations, and you're allowed to have them work for you, even at menial, degrading jobs. Anyway, the expression of the Pasuk is that you have your avodim knanim la'olam bahem ta'avoidu, you're allowed to have them work for you forever, unlike an Eved Ivri who only works for you for 6 years or until Yovel, as the case may be. And then the post continues, v'acheichem b'nei Yisrael, as far as your Jewish brothers, then you're not allowed to make them work with hard labor for you. But now, when the post phrases it like that, la'olam b'hem ta'avoidu, and then it continues, uv'acheichem, and your brothers, so the Braisa says that we can darshan as though the word uv'acheichem goes together with the words before it. La'olam b'hem ta'avoidu uv'acheichem. You're allowed to have your avodim knanim work for you forever without a time limit, and in your brothers, meaning when a fellow yid is not acting the way he's supposed to. Yochala then, but I second is Yochala for the Noyed Kashura. You would think that means even if the Yid is acting properly. No, Talmud Lomar. There we take the word of Achechem and apply it to the rest of the pasuk as it goes. According to the Trup, of Achechem, b'nei Yisrael ishvach, you're not allowed to make a fellow Yid work for you. So therefore, so Robert tells Rav Se'uram, if these guys were acting the way a Yid should act, then yeah, you have no right to force them to carry my litter or wagon or however you want to translate it. But because they're not acting kashura, then you're doing correctly by having them do this. Maybe also the idea is, you know, by working hard on behalf of a tzaddik and a talmid chacham like Rava, that itself will help. That now they'll be around him, and then some of his tzidkus and some of his chassidus will hopefully rub off on them, and they'll improve their ways also. At the end of the perek, the Gemara having talked about a whole perek about the dinim of ribis as far as money, so the Gemara mentions a point about that there's such a thing as ribis of words as well. Tanya, Reb Shimon ben Yochayon, minayin l'noshe b'chaverim mona. How do we know that if a person is owed a mona by somebody else, the ainu roga l'haktim l'sholem, and the borrower is not used to going and meeting him first thing in the morning to say shalom to him? Minayin, how do we know also l'haktim l'sholem? You're not allowed to now that loiva is not allowed to go and do that, and start seeking out the malva to give him shalom. Talmud Loma. Therefore, the pasuk says neshech kol davar asher yishach. You can't take neshech, which is one of the words for ribis, of any davar of which ribis can be taken. Meaning, after the dibur osir, even speaking is osir. So this would be a form of ribis because now he's doing him something that he wasn't doing before. So if he regularly gives him shalom, then of course he's allowed to now. But to do something new like that and be makdim him shalom, then not. The Gemara mentions a couple of other examples as well. For example, the malva might ask the loiva, do me a favor, inform me when Pliny is coming to town. That's also an issue. Even it talks about in Shulchan Aruch to tell him thank you. Maybe an issue. I mean, a regular thanks, fine. You know, the kind of offhand thanks that you give to anybody who does you a toiva, that's fine. But an extra thanks like that above and beyond what people normally do, that can also be an issue of ribis dvarim. Doesn't matter. The point is that still he's giving the other person, he's giving the lender something for having lent him money. Yeah. No, if after the fact, if after the loan is paid off, if then he's makting him shalom or other these things, then that may not be an issue because now the loan's paid off already. It's not outstanding.
Thank you for the
tears.
I'm giving a loan or something.
No, right. So there are certain things that he can do, but he has to be careful not to overstep the line. Yeah. Tanya, then we learn in a braisa. We talked about yesterday. We talked about previously about how people lend at ribis and they don't realize the serious consequences of it. We talked about kofa by the kisra. We talked about that they end up losing their money. So now more on that topic. Tanya Reb Shimon Omer malvid the ribis. People who lend money at ribis yosim imashem avichin mafsidin more than what they gain. They figure they're making a gain because they're earning ribis mafsidin, but they end up losing even more than they gain. So now Marsha explains, one point is that it can mean like this. One of the things it talks about in the Perek is that even though you're not allowed to lend at ribis, there is something called an iska, where as long as it's properly arranged, then you are allowed to do it. We have nowadays a heter iska that was developed over the centuries by various poskim, where Reuven is lending Shimon money, but instead of it being a loan, what we're really doing is Reuven is investing money with Shimon into Shimon's business, and the idea is Shimon will manage the business, and he's splitting some of the profits with Reuven. And there are many details about it that are explained in Shulchan Aruch, and then it's a complicated thing, and it has to be arranged properly by a qualified Beis Din. But in any case, so you do have that concept. There was actually a sicha where that ever talks about the deeper idea behind it is that when a person lends money at ribis without having a heter iska, then in effect, what he's saying is, so basically, I don't care about what's going to happen with your business. I want my money back together with the ribis. Applied to our relationship with the Eibishter, it's saying that Hashem is giving us resources, and Hashem doesn't care whether we're actually successful in our avodah or not. And that's a very bad thing. As opposed to an iska represents, you have a stake, you the malva have a stake in the success of the business, and that represents that the Eibishter also, so to speak, has a stake in that our avodah should be successful. Anyway, so now Maharsha explains that you're going to think That, so what? I'm not receiving ribis, I'm receiving profits from the business. But the fact is, sometimes the business can go sour and it ends up being more of a loss than there was a gain. And if you're still going to demand that you get your extra amount, then that's what we mean. Yosef Mashem Avichin Mafsidin, then sometimes he may try to cut corners and say, well, the deal was with the Heter Ista that I'm entitled to a return on it, but not always are you entitled to a return because sometimes there's a greater loss than there was a return. And then he explains also one of the details of a Heter Iska is that you're supposed to pay the managing partner. Let's say in our case, Reuven is investing money with Shimon. Part of the deal is that he's supposed to pay Shimon for his schar tircha, for the amount that for the effort that Shimon is putting in managing the business. So now if he doesn't do that, then it's also there's a hefsid because now he's losing out, and therefore that creates problems of ribis. So that's another meaning of this Yosef Mashem Avichin Mafsidin. Then there are different other explanations. Yad Yosef over here on the side points out another meaning of it is that in general, when a person does an Avera, as we say in Pirkei Avos, Hevei Mechashed, Hefsed, Schar Avera, Kenegad Hefseda, think of, you might gain something in the short term from an Avera, but you stand to lose much more in the long term. Here, the loss is, as we learned yesterday, is Kofa Be'ikr, as the Gemara is now going to say, and therefore that's a much greater loss than the financial benefit that he stands to gain from it. The loy oid, not only that, not only are they losing out because they lose their wealth or the business may go sour or whatever, Elisha Masimin Moshe Rabbeinu Fakam Vaterose Emes. They're in effect saying that Moshe Rabbeinu is wise and his Torah is true. Now Rashi explains this as a euphemism, meaning it's the other way around. Such people who lend money at ribis are actually making it sound the other way around. And they say, you know what? If Moshe Rabbeinu had known that there was profit to be made in ribis, he never would have written in the Torah that it's osur. So therefore, in effect, they're saying that Moshe didn't know what he's talking about, which is a very serious thing of koifa be'ikir, and therefore they're losing out because of that. That's Rashi's explanation. Maushah says that no, it can actually mean literally that they are actually saying that Moshe is chacham b'terosa emes, but they're saying, you know what, that would be when it's actual ribis. Me, I'm just getting profits from the business. If Moshe had known that there's such an option, he wouldn't have said a blanket statement, don't take ribis. He would have distinguished between ribis and profits. So fine, I agree that Moshe is a chacham, but it's just it's human chachma. And I agree that terosa emes, it's true according to what Moshe thinks, but not what the Eibishter says. So therefore, he's denying that Moshe is a Navi. He's saying, fine, Moshe is a smart guy, but he's not a Navi. And that's also a very serious, thing of Kofa Be'ikr. So there are several other points that different Mephoshim talk about what exactly he means by this. One thing, Ben Yehoyada says another meaning of it is, the person says, yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu was a chacham. He stayed day and night learning Torah. So he doesn't know how the business world works. If he knew how these things work, then he would have written things much differently in the Torah. And you can't talk like that. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Ki osir of Dini Omar, when Rav Dini came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, "Here's another din in this connection." As far as when a person has lent money to somebody else, so not directly. As far as matters of now the rest of this is not really talking so much about dinim of ribis specifically, but more generally about lending money, about dinim between the malva and the loiva. So minayim l'noshu b'chaverin money. How do we know that if a person is owed a money by somebody else, v'yedeya she'ein loy, and he knows that other person does not have the money to pay back, she'll also laver l'fonim. He's not allowed to walk in front of him in order to make the guy feel uncomfortable Talmud loymer. Therefore, the pasuk says, loysia l'kinosha, do not act like to him as a nosha, as somebody who's demanding his payment. So don't, because you don't want to embarrass him. So if he's not paying up, take him to Beis Din. But you can't put that kind of social pressure on him. Rab Ami and Rab Asi both say not only that, but keilu donin b'shnei dinin. A person does that; he's over on that, and he does walk in front of the loiva in order to embarrass him. It's as if he's judging him with two kinds of judgments, with two kinds of punishments. The Nehemiah, as we find a pasuk in Tehillim, hirkavta enesh l'reshenu. You've made people wide over our heads. We've come through fire and water. So now, what does this have to do with somebody lending money? Rashi explains that the word lode shenu, in Aramaic, the word for anosha, somebody who is owed money by somebody else and is demanding payment, the Aramaic word for it is rashia. So hekav to enish, you've made people wide, lode shenu, in a way where they act towards us as a rashia, as somebody who's demanding their payment. And the result is, bonu v'esh v'mayim, we've come through fire and water, feeling the embarrassment of it. Why fire and water? Marsha says, you know, earlier in the previous perek, we talked about a nas dvarim, where it causes somebody to turn pale. We said first the blood rushes to their face, and then it drains out. So the blood rushing to the face is like fire, like red fire, and then when it drains and the person is pale, is like pale or colorless water. So it's like ba'esh v'mayim, it's like he's punishing him with fire and water. So you're not allowed to do that. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Kol Mish Yesh Leim Mois. When a person has money, Umalva Oisim Shaloi VeEdim, and he lends it out without Edim, Over Mishum V'Lifne Ivalei Sitin Michshol. Then he's over on what the Torah says: do not put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Because now what's going to happen is the loiver is likely to think that now he has an opportunity to deny the loan, which itself is an avera. You have an avera in the Torah. It's the chachashu. Don't deny that you owe money that you owe. So now when he lends it out without edim and gives that other person the opportunity to deny the loan, then he's over on Lifne Iver. So, in fact, Yon Yaakov brings that when the pasuk says in Kesef Talva Es Ami, that hints to that point. In Kesef Talva, when you lend money, Es Ami, make sure that my people, that two Edim from my people, are present, in order that the other guy can't deny it. Rish Lakish Amar Godim Klola L'Atzmai. Rish Lakish says not only that, but he brings a klola on himself. Because what happens is, Reuven lent Shimon money, and now later on, Shimon denies it. People are going to think, how likely is it that Shimon is just outright lying? They're going to say, you know what, it's more likely that Reuven is harassing Shimon for no reason, and therefore they're going to curse him, and then he's causing that for himself. Shenema, as the positive says, Te'olam Nasifse Shoker, may the lying lips be muted. Hadoibra Sal Tzadik Osok, that speak falsehood against the Tzadik, meaning exactly that people curse this Reuven. What do you mean? How do you put down a tzaddik like that, Shimon, who, and then claiming that he owes you money when really he doesn't? After all, every person has, Marshall points out, every person has a cheskas kashus. So therefore, he causes that people are going to curse him and think that he's trying to get money out of the other person for nothing. Now, Anaf Yosef points out, why would it be that way? Maybe people would be more likely to suspect Shimon that he's lying. And he explains because what is Shimon counterclaiming? Is Shimon counterclaiming, I definitely don't owe you, Bori? Or is he counterclaiming Shema? I'm not sure. So when he says Bori, people are more likely to believe him. If he's not sure, then he says Shema, then fine. People are not necessarily going to hold it against Reuven for dunning him for the money. So now, after all, if he lends him with Edim, and it is true that even when he lent him with Edim, he is believed to say Paraiti. The Gemara does mention in Shavuos that if Reuven lends money to Shimon with Edim, Shimon will still have the ability to say afterwards, I paid it off. And Reuven doesn't necessarily have proof against him, unless he specifically told him to begin with, pay me back only in the presence of Edim. But at least then, he's not going to call us Klola La'atzmai, because now he doesn't have a migui. Now he can't say, I don't know if I paid you, because then the Edim would, then we have the Edim that he lent him the money, as opposed to otherwise he does. So therefore we'd be more likely to believe the person who says that I never borrowed it in the first place, or that I didn't pay it, or that I paid you back already when there are no Edim, and therefore we're saying that the Malva is causing a klala for himself. So the Gemara gives an example of this. Amr le Rabbanan le Rav Ashi. So the Chachamim one time told Rav Ashi, Kamakain Ravina koma de Amr Rabbanan. You should know that Ravina keeps everything that the Chachamim said. So not just all the mitzvahs daraisa, but even all of the pieces of advice and things like that that the Chachamim said. So Rav Ashi decided to test him out. Sholach le Bahadi Panya de Mali Shabza. So shortly before Shabbos was going to begin, he sends a message to Ravina, Lishadu Limar, Asora Zuzi, Rebbe Ravina, would you please send me 10 Zuzim as a loan to Isrami Liktina de Arla Mizvan because I just came across a small plot of land that I'd like to buy. It's interesting, actually, there's a sifa on this week's parasha in Chelek Chav Zayin talking about Yaakov buying the plot of land in Shem from Meir Ksita, where Rashi translates Ksita as a ma. So it's kind of a hundred ma in the times of Tanakh was equal to 5 sloyim. So here we have an example where we don't know how large that plot of land was, but it probably wasn't all that big. But here we see that a smallish plot is worth 10 zuzim. So I need to borrow some money on the spot. So Ravina sent him back a message. Nasi Mar Sadi, Rebbe Rav Ashi, please bring witnesses. The Nichtiv Ksava, and write a document. I don't want to lend to you otherwise. Sholachle Afilu Anon Ami. So Rav Ashi sends back a message. Me also, I can understand. Fine. The Chacham said don't lend money to somebody without Aidim because he may deny it. Is somebody like me, a Tamad Chacham and a Rosh Hashiva, suspect of that kind of thing as well? Ravin answered him, yeah, Koshkin Mar, on the contrary, even more so with you, the Torah Begirsa, you're very busy learning and teaching Torah, umishli, and then you may forget that I lent you the money, Vigodim, Klola Asmayan, and then I'm going to cause a Klola for myself, because then I'm going to be dunning you for the money, and people are going to say, hey, Tochen, Rav Ashi would never deny a loan that he actually took out, so yes, even a Tamad Chacham, or all the more so, a Tamad Chacham, you have to be careful and not lend without aiding. The poskim say that it's not necessarily, strictly speaking, aiding. It's enough, for example, you have a shtar. It's enough, for example, that the lawyer writes out a shtar, even with just ksav yodeh, his own handwriting, that says, I owe you X amount, it won't necessarily stand up completely in Beis Din because it's supposed to have Edim on it, but nevertheless it's good enough to be Yotze this Din that we're saying over here to not lend money without Edim. So the Gemara continues, Tanan Abanan, Gimel Tsoyakim Ve'en Nanim. There are 3 kinds of people who cry out to the Edishter, who cry out to Beis Din Shomata. They cry out and complain that they're being wronged in judgment, Ve'enim Nanim, but they don't get answered because they cause themselves the problem. And they are Ve'elohein. Number one, Mishiyesh Lemoris Malva Oisim Shalai Be'edim. What we just said, he lends money. He has money and he lends it out without Edim. So now, when the other person denies the debt, and then he goes and the Malva goes to Beis Din and says, I have a complaint. I lent money to this guy and now he's denying it. Beis Din is going to tell him, sorry, tough luck. You should have had Edim or a shtar. Number two, Va'akoina Odom Atzmai. The second one is somebody who acquires a master for himself, which the Gemara is going to explain in a minute what that means. And the third one, Misha Ishta Mishelas Olav, somebody whose wife dominates him. The Rishonim explain in particular what that means is where he's promised to pay her a very large amount of money for her ksuba, for example. So then she has him over a barrel not for her ksuba necessarily, that would only be if he divorces her or dies, but if he promises her a large amount of money, then he's going to be held to that and he may not be able to afford to do that. So, Koina Odom La'atzmai Maidi. So what is this case of Koina Odom La'atzmai? Ikadamri, one version is Toilin Chosab Oud Gechavim. One version is that it means, as we talked about earlier in the Perek, where he attributes his money to a goy. We talked about that a person might do that. He might falsely claim that the money that he has actually belongs to a goy, and then he wants to lend it out at Ribis, claiming that he's doing it as an agent on behalf of the goy. But meanwhile, what's going to happen? Rashi explains. So even if he's not doing it in order to be over on Ribis, Rashi explains, he may be doing it what the Gemara calls Shaloi Lahasbias Atzma. He doesn't want to show himself off as a rich guy. So people are thinking, wait, you're wheeling and dealing all the time with these large amounts of money. You must be rich. So he wants to not have people know that he's rich. So he claims that this isn't my own money. I'm managing it on behalf of Pliny the Goy. what may happen, Rashi explains, the goy then goes and gets Edim to overhear him saying that, and then he goes to Beis Din and says, and then he goes to Beis Din or secular court, as the case may be, and says, you know what, I have Edim that you said in the presence of Edim that money is actually mine, and then he takes it from the Yid. So now, when the Yid goes to Beis Din or to court and says, wait, that's not true, the money is in fact not mine, they're going to tell him, well, you know, you're the one who claimed it, and you said it, and you were careless enough to say it in front of Edim, there's nothing we can do for you. Marsha points out, by the way, that usually, now we have the expression koina odom la'atzma in connection with an Eved Ivri. We have a din that says that when a person buys an Eved Ivri, it's kakoina odim la'atzmai in the sense, as the Gemara tells in Kiddushin, he has to make sure the conditions for the Eved are at least as good as his own, and famously, as we know, if he only has one pillow, for example, he has to give it to the Eved. On the other hand, Amar Shah explains, the Gemara doesn't want to use that explanation over here because at least the person buys an Eved Ivri, he has some kind of gain out of it. First of all. Second of all, what do you mean? He has an Eved to work for him. Second of all, so fine, he has to give him his last pillow, but okay, that's a minor thing as compared to the fact that he has him to work for him. Second of all, what do you mean, Soyakin Rein and Nen? What is there to complain about in Beis Din? But these three cases, he's not actually gaining from doing this. He lent out money without Edim. He doesn't have anything to gain from it. He should have used Edim. He claims that the money belongs to a guy, and the same thing with the other cases. So therefore, that's why the Gemara wants to explain that Kona Odom Asmi means one of these things. So again, one explanation is it means that he says that his money actually belongs to a goy, and then the goy takes advantage of that and gets Edim to testify that in fact that's how it is. Ikadami, a second version as a kosev nechosim lebonav b'chayav, when while he's alive he writes out a document that gives his nechosim to his sons. So now if they decide that, you know what, we have the nechosim, we don't have to support him, we don't have to support our father anymore, what recourse does he have? He can go to Beis Din, but the Beis Din is going to tell him, sorry, you shouldn't have done that, you shouldn't have given them all your nechosim. Ikadami, and the third version, gebishle b'homosa, when a person is having a bad time of it in one city, and he doesn't go to a different city, where if he had, then Mashana Mok and Mashana Mazel. Therefore, if he decides to stay put and he still continues to have the bad Mazel over here, then it's his fault. What does that have to do with Koina Odom Atzmei, Marsha says? In other words, not so much the koina odom la'atzmei. According to this third opinion, it's actually not the definition. This definition that he stays in one place rather than moving is not part of koina odom la'atzmei, but it's part of the tsoyakin ve'ena nenin, that he cries out to the Eibishter to help him, and Hashem doesn't answer him because he should lech lecha me'aretzecha, try going to a different place and see if you'll have better mazel there. With that said, the Rashba discusses and different other talk about it. It's not so simple. Part of it will depend really on, not always is it the case. We don't always say, sometimes we have a person has a bad mazel in one place and he moves to another and it's not any better over there. So it really depends what kind of zeder there is on him, min hashamayim, and what level of bitochen he has. You have, for example, to give an example as far as the matter of bitochen, the Medrash tells a story, I think I've told it in the Shira before, where one, there was a Kohen living in Eretz Yisrael who was having a very hard time with Parnassa. So he says to his wife, you know, I want to travel to Chutz La'aretz and see if I can find a better job and better Parnassa over there. This Kohen was an expert at looking at Saras and telling people whether he's Tom, whether Tomei or Tar. So he tells his wife, before he leaves, he tells her, let me tell you the basics of how Saras works, and that way now people can come to you for their diagnoses, and then, fine, you'll have to have an actual Kohen to say Tomei or Tar, but at least this way you can give the diagnosis, because he was known to be one of the local experts on it. And he starts by explaining to her, we know that one of the simonim that makes Saras definitive, Mukhlat, is when you have two white hairs in it. Two or more white hairs in it. What does white hair have to do with Saras? So he explains, because each hair has a follicle that it grows from, and when the hair turns white, it means the follicle is dried up as a result of the Saras, and therefore the hair is not getting nourishment, and then it turns white. So his wife says to him, wait a minute, so you're telling me every individual hair on the body has its own follicle that the Eibishter gave it to give it nourishment? You're a whole person with many, many hairs on him. You don't think the Eibishter provided you a thing for Parnassa over here in Eretz Yisrael? Stay put, and the Eibishter can give you Parnassa over here just as well, rather than moving to Chutz La'aretz. He realized she had a point. He stayed put, and sure enough, he was able to find Parnassa in Eretz Yisrael. So it all factors in. In other words, someone was saying that he doesn't go to another city. It will really depend whether there's what the likelihood is of finding something someplace else. But it's also a matter of what level of bitachon he has in terms of the Eivishta helping him here versus there. Ein Makom Al Yishlein factors into that also, right? That a person feels a certain natural liking to where he lives, even if it's objectively not so good. Yeah. Ha'umnin Perek Shishi. So Hasulchas Umnin is really what the Perek is called. So it starts talking about the Perek deals with various dinim where you hire workers and they quit, and also with dinim of you rent a donkey or some other equipment like that. So the Mishnah says Hasulchas Achamar, a person rents a donkey Lahilicha Bahar, where the understanding is that he's going to take it on a mountain road, and instead he takes it on a road in the valley. Now the Gemara points out mountains and valleys each have an advantage and a disadvantage compared to the other. In the mountains, the air is pure. In the valleys, it's usually hotter and the air is more stagnant. On the other hand, the strain of going up and down mountain roads is also harder on the animal. So if the deal was when he rented the animal that he's going to take it on a mountain road by Lichel Babika, and he took it in a valley, and then the animal died, or Babika by Lichel Bahar, the other way around, where he's going to take it in a valley where the air is not as pure, but the strain of going is not as much, and instead he took it on a mountain. Afilu zu esemilin, even if both roads are the same distance, 10 mil, umesa, and then the animal died, chayev, then he's chayev to pay. Now, had it been that he rented it to take it on a mountain and it died, that would be called Mesa Machmas Malacha. He's Potter, and in fact, the Gemara discusses under what circumstances is the original Socher required to give him another animal to finish the trip. You know, you think of like in nowadays, you know, you rent a car and it breaks down, then the rental car company is supposed to provide you another one. So here it's a similar kind of thing, but here where he took it in a different road than was agreed, then he's the one who's chayev. Then the Mishnah says that he's the one who's chayev.
Should he go on a mountain? He can overload the animal also with the hills.
Well, that's also true, yeah. But Amar Rabbi Gemara. So now the Gemara discusses Homani Rav Meir. Which Tana would be that says that just the fact that he took it on a mountain alone is enough to be mechayev of him for the death of the animal? That would be specifically Reb Meir. After all, people take animals all the time on mountains and nothing happens to them. So why, just because he took it on a mountain, why shouldn't we say maybe this animal just had a heart attack or something? Why should we be mechayev of him to pay for it? So the Hamani Reb Meir, because this is specifically like Reb Meir, the Omar called a Mavir al Das Shabalabayas Nikur Gazlan, where he says if a person does anything different than what the Balabayas had said, then he's called a Gazlan. So therefore, now he's called a Gazlan, he's chayev for anything that happens to the animal that was in his care.
Could be that the roads are stormy or something.
It doesn't matter. Right. Obviously, if there's reason to say, but in other words, here we're talking about we don't know. He took it on the mountain and it dropped dead. We don't know whether it would have dropped dead equally well if it had been in the valley. There's nothing particular that we can point to that there's dangerous conditions on this road, but Ameir says that doesn't matter. Just the fact that he did something different than what he had agreed to, than what the Balabais had told him where to take it, is enough to make him considered a Gazlan, and therefore, as would be with any Gazlan, he's chayev for anything that happens because he was koine. So the Gemara goes on, hey, Reb Meir v'chola, which statement of Reb Meir bears out this point that he holds that kolam mavir al das shabalabayis nikur gazlan? So the Gemara goes through a couple of possibilities, and the Gemara says those are not a proof, and elahor Reb Meir. Rather, it comes from the following statement of Reb Meir. The elahor Reb Meir, the magbis purim. Rather, it comes from a statement of Reb Meir regarding money that was collected for purim. And Purim, yeah, Matonis Levionim. So now what happens if the local tzedakah fund has collected money on behalf of the poor people for Purim, where the idea is that it's given out to the poor people for the Purim Suda. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Magbis Purim the Purim, money that's collected, that the Gaboi Tzedakah collects specifically for the poor people, Sudas Purim. Lepurim, it has to be used, Zavka for Purim. They have to give it out to the Aniyim on Purim. They can't hold some of it back to replenish the Tzedakah fund. In fact, Tosfos points out, usually with other kinds of tzedakah, they would. Usually the gabbai tzedakah have more leeway what they can do with the money they collected. Even they collected for a particular purpose, then usually the gabbai tzedakah have a certain leeway in how much they're, in what they're going to use it for. But dafka by Purim, we're saying that no, the mitzvah of the Sudas Purim is so important that we cannot redirect the money for any purpose, for any other purpose. Similarly, when they collected in a certain town for the Purim Suda, for the Aniyim, then it has to be done, it has to be given out. It has to be given out Davka in that city. They can't go and give it to the Aniyim of a different city. The ain medaktikin bedover. Now, with the gaboy tzedakah should not be medaktikin in the matter, meaning the gaboy tzedakah might say to themselves, we collected a lot of money, the aniyim don't need all that money for the Purim Soda, let's use some of it for the Purim Soda, and the rest of it we'll use for the general tzedakah fund. Nope, they can't do that. They can't do that because again that would be going against what the people had stipulated when they gave it to them, where it's supposed to be for Purim. A different explanation that a number of Rishonim have is Ein Medaktikin Bedover means, like with a famous expression, Kalaposhet Yad Little, that on Purim, anybody who stretches out his hand to take is entitled to be given. We're Ein Medaktikin Bedover, unlike the rest of the year, where we check to see, as a poor person who's claiming tzedakah, is he genuinely poor? On Purim, we don't do that. Anyway, continues the Braisa. Aval Lotzenes Agolim. So what we do is, we use the money, and we go and buy calves with them, which are high-quality meat. And we shech them, and the poor people eat them for their Purim Soda. Now, if there's any meat left, and they can't eat it on Purim, then fine, yippel l'kishol tzedakah, the rest of it goes back into the general tzedakah fund. So any meat that's left over that wasn't eaten for the Purim Soda, fine, the gabbai tzedakah can sell it and use the money for the general tzedakah fund. But they can't l'chatchila plan that we're going to use some of this money for other purposes. They have to plan to use it all for Purim. Rabbi Yezer says another din in this connection. Now the Tanakhama of this Benaisa was talking about the responsibility of the Gaboy Tzedakah. They have a responsibility that all the money they collect should be Davka earmarked for the Purim Soda. Rabbi Yezer says, when an individual person was given money for the Purim Soda, the same thing, Magbis Purim Purim, what's collected for Purim has to be Davka for Purim. The individual Oni himself cannot decide that he's going to use that money for something else. The Ena Oni Rashoi Likachman with Suala Sandoloi, the poor person would not even be allowed to use that money to buy a lace for his sandals. Elen can histam, a maimon ansheh ir, unless he made a tnai in the presence of the people of the city, or at least of the vada kahal, the shiva torah ir, that he should be able to repurpose the money for that. Dibur Rabbi Yaakov Shomer Shem Rameir. So this is what Rabbi Yaakov said in the name of Rameir. These two opinions of the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer is Rabbi Meir's version of the Machlokas, which Rabbi Yaakov quotes in his name. And says that you could, both the Gabbai Tzedakah and the individual poor person, could repurpose the money for other purposes. So therefore we see that Rabbi Meir is saying that no, the Gabbai Tzedakah can't change anything from what they had collected it for, and the individual poor person, Rabbi Eliezer says, can't either. So that shows, Kol Mavral, Das Shabalabais, Nikur Gazlan, if they were to use that money that was collected for Purim for some other purpose, then that would be Gzela.
Well, first of all, the person gives it, it's stuck in. Does it matter if the poor person is going to use it for shoes?
Well, that's what we're saying. In other words, since they had collected it, having in mind for the Purim Soda, we assume the people gave it al manas, that it should be used dafka for the Purim Soda, and therefore if you change that, to change that would be gzeila. So therefore that shows that Rameir holds that kolam mashana is that kolam mavral das balabais nikur gazlan. However, the Gemara says, not necessarily a proof, Duma Hosam Nami, maybe you could say, they're also, you know why they can't do that, Da Daita de Purim, who do you have life, because the money was given specifically for the sake of Purim, he didn't give it to him having in mind something else. So in other words, the money is considered to be in the chazaka of the owner, except what's going to be used on the Purim Soda. So if the Gabbai Tzedakah collected $1,000 and they used 900 of it for the Sudas Purim, for the poor people, it comes out that 100 of it still remains in the chazaka of the Balabatim. And if they now go and put that 100 into the general Tzedakah fund, then they're stealing it. That doesn't necessarily prove, though, that doesn't necessarily prove that a mayor would say that just the fact that you're changing from Das Balabais is automatically Gezel. In this particular case, they have in mind that it should be Dafka for the Purim Soda.
So what's Because, I mean, what should you do to 600 animals?
So that's what we're saying. You have to go spend the $1,000 completely on food for the poor people. They'll eat as much of it as they can on Purim. If you have anything left, if they have any leftovers, then fine. You can sell those and use those for the tzedakah fund. Because at least you did, at least the Gaboy tzedakah did what they could in terms of spending it on food for the poor people, for the Purim Seder. So the Gemara is saying, in other words, that there's no specific proof from this Braisa that Reb Meir would actually say that in other cases, just being Maver al Das Baal HaBayis in and of itself is considered Gezel, maybe only over here because of the importance of the Purim Soda. So when we're saying before that in the case of the donkey, when he takes it on a mountain instead of a valley or the other way around, and it dies, then automatically he's Chayev, and we're saying that's according to Reb Meir, we haven't yet proved that Reb Meir holds of such a concept. So we'll continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Baz Hashem, and the Gemara will bring a different proof for this that Reb Meir holds of that concept, that to be Maver al Das Baal HaBayis in and of itself is Nikra Gazlon, and therefore that applies to the case of the donkey. So just taking it on a different kind of road than was agreed is automatically enough to make him be considered a Gazlon and to be Chayav for anything that happens there. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Yud Gimel Kislev. So the Rebbe was talking about in a sicha in Nun Aleph let's get down to Maisiv Apoil. We have to be ma'ur, and we have to proclaim and publicize in every place that in order to accomplish that Mashiach should be revealed, that Mashiach should come, take it from Yad, every single Yid, and Noshim Vataf, has to increase in Limud HaTorah, especially in Yoni Mashiach HaGola. Best of all would be if that learning is done by Rabin, meaning with at least 10 people. First of all, you have anyway, Asorah Shiyoshim Vaisim HaTorah Shkinish Rui B'Nim. Besides that, when many people get together to learn about, or to learn Torah, and in Yoni Gola Mashiach, especially, that causes people feel it more. They have more of a simcha, they feel more of an excitement about it, greater and greater, that now it really makes them yearn even more for Mashiach, seeing that there are so many other people involved in this as well. Okay. Continuing with Hilchos Hashkomos HaBoker and Mahadura Kama of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, so we said a person has to get up right away because the Melech Malchai and Lochem is standing over him. So here, when a person is lying in bed and getting up, he has to realize that the Eidoshir is watching him and he needs to get up right away. So the Alter Rebbe goes on to say the same thing. A person has to keep this kind of thing in mind, anything that he does throughout the day. When a person sits and when a person moves around and when a person does things when he's alone at home is not the same kind of thing as he would do in front of a great king. And the same way, a person doesn't talk the same way when a person is in his family circle, he talks in a certain way, and then when he's standing in front of a king, he talks in a completely different way. So then when a person realizes that the great king, Malach Malchai Amlochem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Meloi Kol Ha'aretz Kvod, is standing over and watching him, then he should realize that he has to behave and he has to speak in a different way than he would if nobody was watching him. As the Pasuk says, Yisosu Ishva Mistorim, could a person hide himself in hidden places, V'ani Lo Yarenu, Nu'um Hashem, and Hashem says, do you think I wouldn't see him? So when a person realizes like that, then right away he feels a yira, and he feels a submissiveness to the, from fear of the Eibishter, and be embarrassed to act in the wrong way, to be embarrassed to act in the wrong way in front of the Eibishter. We talked about the Alter Rebbe talked about in Madura Basra that we learned before. What should a person do if he doesn't feel that hisoros when he starts thinking like that? So then we said that there are steps that he should take. I mean, for in Tanya, actually, the Alter Rebbe talks about quite a bit of what a person should do if he doesn't feel that way. But here the Alter Rebbe says, and in Madura Basra it said generically that a person should ponder deeply about this until the taka is affected, and also do tshuva because you should realize that his averus are blocking him from that yira. So now in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe also talks about how a person has to be misbonin in this, and he may have to break his yetzahara and yell at it and so on and so forth in order to get himself into a state where he's capable of feeling this kind of yira and this kind of busha for the Eibishter.